The only chance that exists for the liberation of Palestinians, in my opinion, is the resistance of the people inside Palestine and the support of the resistance both in from Lebanon, Iraq, Iran, and Yemen. I mean, the reality is that I don't know of any peoples in history who have managed to overthrow the kind of oppressor that Israel is, the kind of vicious oppressor that Israel ideologically is, by peaceful means. And we've not seen any evidence for the Western powers or the UN or any of the apparatus controlled by the Anglo-Zionist Empire in really being serious to create any solution for Palestinians. Okay. We're seeing more and more of the same. It has to be a military resistance which is going to ultimately achieve Israel's downfall.
Thank you both for being with me on this spotlight. Sarah Flanders from the International Action Center out of New York, Said Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator out of London. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Goodbye for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Wa idh qala Ibrahim rabbi arini kayfa tuhyi al-mauta qala awalam tu'min qala bala walakin liyatma'inna qalbi قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. And when Abraham said, "My Lord, show me how you revive the dead," he said, "Do you not believe?" He said, "Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest." He said, "Take four of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening. And know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise." Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israeli regime strikes various locations in Gaza, including Rafah and Gaza City, raising the Palestinian death toll to over 32,000. Russia and China vetoed a U.S. draft resolution at the U.N. Security Council for failing to genuinely call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. And dozens of people are killed as gunmen attack a concert hall near Russia's capital, Moscow. Hello everyone. Now nearly 6 months into Israel's genocidal war on Gaza and regime's unrelenting bombing campaign and shelling have claimed more lives in the Palestinian territory. At least 10 Palestinians were killed in Israeli airstrikes on Gaza City, and a home was struck in the southern city of Rafah where 8 people, mostly women and children, lost their lives. And 3 more people were killed in an airstrike in Khan Yunis, also in the south. The Israeli regime began its war on Gaza back on October the 7th. And since then, more than 32,000 people have been killed, most of them women and children, and over 7,000 are still unaccounted for and presumed buried under rubble. Also, another 74,300 Palestinians have been injured. The United Nations top aid official in occupied Palestinian territories says more supplies and more fuel are needed to make sure the Gaza hospitals can operate.
I've just been inside the Kamal Adwan Hospital. I met with Dr. Usman and his team, and we took a tour of the hospital. We see ourselves what was there, and they're really struggling to provide the services required for the patients coming in, especially children. But there's also a lot of trauma patients coming in, many coming in from the food distributions where there's been a lot of injuries. And then also, because of what's happening in Shifa, many people are coming from Shifa here, and it's overwhelming the hospital. So we had to get more support, more supplies, and more fuel in to make sure the hospital keeps running.
This comes as head of the World Health Organization describes conditions inside the besieged Al-Shifa Hospital in central Gaza as utterly inhumane. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says no basic medical supplies, no dressings for wounds, and no medicine is available at Al-Shifa. According to the WHO chief, over 50 health workers and 143 patients have been trapped in one of the buildings there since the second day of the raid, with extremely limited food and water. Ongoing Israeli strikes in the vicinity of the hospital have made it impossible for patients to receive the care they need. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says over 100 people have so far been killed in Israeli raid on Al-Shifa Hospital. The UN Security Council has rejected a U.S. draft resolution which linked a ceasefire in Gaza to the release of captives by Hamas. 11 Security Council members backed the resolution. However, permanent members Russia and China, as well as rotating member Algeria, voted against it, while one country abstained. Hamas welcomed the rejection of the U.S. U.S. draft resolution. It said the resolution would have given Israel cover and legitimacy for what it called the war of extermination of Palestinians. The Palestinian envoy to the UN called the resolution one-sided. Riyad Mansour expressed support for another draft resolution put forward by elected members of the Security Council, which is expected to be voted on soon. The Russian and Chinese representatives also said the U.S. resolution is imbalanced and does not clearly call for a Gaza ceasefire.
Distinguished colleagues, from the very onset, it was clear that the so-called negotiations which our U.S. colleagues have been engaged in on this issue have been focused merely to drag out the time. All of our comments, all of our red lines were time and time disregarded, as were the proposals of a number of other delegations. This was some kind of an empty rhetorical exercise rather than normal work document. The American product is exceedingly politicized, the sole purpose of which is to help to play to the voters, to throw them a bone in the form of some kind of a mention of a ceasefire in Gaza, and to establish the U.S.'s political ambitions in the region through the establishment of terrorist labels, and to ensure the impunity of Israel, whose crimes in the draft are not even assessed. I wish to draw attention to the following. The U.S. draft contains an effective green light for Israel to mount a military operation in Rafah. At the very least, the authors try to make it such that nothing would prevent Western Jerusalem from continuing their brutal cleansing of the south of the Gaza Strip. And what is Washington actually trying to achieve? We have already stated that we will no longer tolerate pointless resolutions which do not contain a call for a ceasefire, which lead us to nowhere. This draft should not pass with the majority of the membership.
Iran's foreign minister says the tragedy in Gaza has demonstrated to the world that the issue of human rights, including those of women and children, is mere political plaything for the West. In a phone call with leader of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement, Hossein Amir Abdullahian said the inhumane nature of the Israeli regime and U.S. support for genocide is also now clear to everyone. The top Iranian diplomat also called for immediate action by relevant international organizations to stop the genocide and provide unrestricted aid to Gaza residents. For his part, Ziad al-Nakhala hailed Iran's support for the Palestinian people and resistance. He described unity among Palestinian factions as key to their success against the Israeli regime. A funeral has been held for a Palestinian who succumbed to injuries he sustained 8 months ago during an Israeli raid near the occupied West Bank city of Nablus. People gathered to mourn the death of Amir Ghaleb Said Jaghoub in his hometown of Beita. He was shot in the head while regime forces were invading the town in August of last year. A report suggests that Amir was hit as he rushed to help a wounded Palestinian. His death brings to 12 number of Palestinians killed in the West Bank in the past 24 hours. Israeli forces have conducted new raids on different cities since Friday, and that resulted in the killing of 4 Palestinians in Jenin, another 4 in Tulkarm, 1 in Al-Khalil, 1 in Ramallah, and 1 in Abiha. Occupying forces have intensified their incursions into the occupied West Bank since October the 7th, that's the day when the regime launched its genocidal war on Gaza. And earlier we discussed with our Ramallah correspondent Mona Candil new Israeli raids on cities and villages in the occupied West Bank and the abduction of Palestinians there.
The Israeli troops also stormed the village of Tirmusaya, north Ramallah. They have raided the village of Yatta in Al-Khalil, southern the occupied West Bank, as well as the refugee camp of Aida in Bethlehem, and detained a number of Palestinians from these areas. In Tulkarem, the Israeli forces stormed Tulkarem, stormed a number of villages there, and exchange of fire have taken place between members of the resistance groups and the Israeli forces in Tulkarem areas. At least one Palestinian child was wounded during a military operation in the village of the Nabi in Tulkarem. The Israeli forces had also carried out an operation and detained a number of Palestinians in the village of Jain Safut in Qalqilia. And this comes while the Palestinians continue to face strict measures at the military checkpoints, and people are being detained at military checkpoints not only during the military operations to the Palestinian villages. According to the Commission of Prisoners Affairs, the Israeli forces had arrested 25 Palestinians on Friday, and early Saturday a number of Palestinians had been detained, and this means that over 7,730 Palestinians were arrested by the Israeli forces since the 7th of October.
The U.S. and U.K. have conducted new airstrikes on Yemen as tensions remain high in West Asia over Israeli genocide in Gaza. Yemen's Al-Masira TV said that Washington and London struck several locations across the country, including the suburbs of the capital, Sana'a. Supreme Political Council of Yemen has condemned the strikes, and in a statement it said that U.S.-led aggression on Yemen violates international law and the sovereignty of the Arab country. It added that Yemen will respond in kind. Sana'a has also reiterated its support for Palestine as it continues operations against Israel and its allies in the Red Sea. U.S. and U.K. launched first airstrikes on Yemen in mid-January for what they call protecting international shipping routes. Yemen, though, has rejected that claim and has retaliated by targeting American and British vessels in the Red Sea. Meanwhile, tens of thousands of Yemenis once again fill the streets of the capital, Sana'a, and other cities to reaffirm their steadfast support for the Palestinian cause and resistance. Abdul Latif Al-Washali reports from Sana'a.
Under the banner, "Our operations will continue, stop your aggression," tens of thousands of Yemenis have taken to the streets of the capital, Sana'a, and other cities across the country to renew their full support for the Palestinians. They have also called on Yemen's armed forces to persist with their naval operations in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden in solidarity with Palestine.
"We realize that the cause is our cause, and the enemy is our enemy, and we are fighting a battle that is essentially our battle. Our blood is one, we and the Palestinians, and Islam is the religion of all of us, and we cannot abandon our brothers in religion. We are fighting from a Quranic culture, and what the people of Gaza are exposed to is the same as what the Yemenis were exposed to."
Protesters chanted slogans criticizing the United Nations Security Council's recent statement against Yemen's naval operations. They argue that the world body has demonstrated its alignment with White House policies, disregarding its role in maintaining international security.
"Today, Yemenis are rallying in dozens of squares in their millions, as if it were a human flood, an extension of the Al-Aqsa flood operation. The Yemenis today, despite the years of war and despite the difficult circumstances they are going through, are still committed to their first and central issue, which is the Palestinian cause."
"The Yemeni people came out today to send a message to the people of Palestine in Gaza that they are not alone. The Yemenis stand with Palestine with all their military capabilities, whether naval forces or drones. And our message to the enemies is that we will not stop fighting and confronting them."
Earlier, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, the leader of the Ansarullah movement, warned the Western powers of stronger and more effective attacks in the future. He highlighted that the Yemeni army has managed to outmaneuver Western technology in surveillance, jamming, and interception, marking a significant advancement in the development of Yemen's military industries.
Despite the sunny weather, thousands of Yemenis have gathered here while fasting to make their point. They say if not for the border restrictions, they would pass through neighboring states to reach Palestine and join the struggle against the Israeli invaders until the liberation of the occupied territories. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Spain, Ireland, Malta, and Slovenia have announced plans to recognize the state of Palestine as global solidarity with the Palestinian cause gains momentum. Spain's Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez made the announcement following a meeting in Brussels with his counterparts from the other three EU countries. Sanchez said recognition of Palestinian statehood is the only way to lasting peace in the region. He said the recognition will come into effect in Spain within the current four-year legislative term. The global solidarity movement for Palestine has gained momentum since Israel launched its genocidal war on Gaza. More than 130 countries throughout the world have already recognized the state of Palestine. And now, South Africans have held events throughout the country marking National Human Rights Day with a particular focus on the plight of the Palestinians of Gaza. In Cape Town, people from different walks of life participated in a pilgrimage depicting the trek that Gazans have had to make as Israel's war machine has swept through the strip. Hassan Syria reports.
Hundreds of people have engaged in a 41-kilometer pilgrimage, symbolically depicting the length of the Gaza Strip and a trek that scores of Palestinians have been forced to make due to the US-backed Israeli campaign of genocide against them. The event has been organized by a collective of Christian bodies. The organizers say it is important to demonstrate that Christian Zionism does not represent them.
The church has been very complicit within this genocide and within Palestinian suppression more generally, and because of that is not condemning what they're doing, is not recognizing what they're doing as ethnic cleansing and genocide, and not speaking out. And we wanted to challenge that narrative and challenge that stance and show an expression of solidarity, show that that's not the only thing coming out of the church.
The demonstration also coincides with South Africa's commemoration of the Sharpeville massacre, when the apartheid regime gunned down 69 protesters in what is recognized as a turning point in the struggle for liberation. For those who participated, the Palestinian suffering resonates deeply.
And what I saw today in my own, as I walked, you know, because it's a pilgrimage, reflecting, I said to myself, I feel my feet, you know, burning. I feel this old legs not moving as it should. But it's nothing in comparison what people are experiencing.
The South African public is still asleep, and they must start waking up to see what Israel is doing. For what they do there, they can also come and do anywhere else in the world.
I'm a proud Jew. I'm not a Zionist, and I never have been. And I think that what the Netanyahu government is doing is actually a moral genocide. Whether they call it illegal, I don't know whether it fits legally, but it's morally a genocide. And I'm appalled. I'm heartbroken. As somebody who's lived through apartheid, we have seen this before. We should know better.
The Gaza ceasefire pilgrimage coincided with the somber Christian period of Lent, and sacrifice and resilience were recurring themes pilgrims pointed to as they attempted to symbolically walk in the footsteps of Gazans. The Gaza ceasefire march is another example of the human resolve for justice, and as Palestinians endure the latest Israeli aggression for almost 6 months now, the people of the world will only intensify their commitment for Palestinian liberation. Hassan Syria, Cape Town.
The worst terror attack in Russia in years. At least 60 people are killed and 145 wounded in a shooting attack claimed by Daesh terrorists. Now, the death toll is expected to rise as dozens are in serious condition. Attack took place when gunmen in combat fatigues opened fire and detonated explosives at a major concert hall on the outskirts of Moscow. In a Telegram post, the Daesh terrorist group said its gunmen had managed to escape afterwards. Russian authorities have launched a massive manhunt. The Moscow mayor says all cultural, sporting, and other mass events will be canceled in the capital for the weekend. The attack is the worst in Russia since the 2004 Beslan school siege, in which more than 330 people, half of them children, were killed. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
The whole world is silent towards oppression. Even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust. From the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps. From the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord and Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee, and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O the Most Merciful.
Ayahs, 30 days. A monotheist person not only reflects on the noble Quran, but also tries to explain the ayahs of this heavenly scripture to others and make them familiar with its teachings. Explicating of the Quranic teachings, first of all, was the duty of the Prophet and his infallible successors, peace be upon them. Every faithful person too, according to the extent that they had learnt from the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them, embarked on this heavy duty. So, the ulama or Muslim scholars took over this duty after the occultation of the 12th infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance, and have seriously continued this job until present day. Today, this duty has become even more important due to the broad assault of the enemies against the beliefs of Islam and humanity. The topic of the 12th episode of the Ramadan special will be mistrust in the enemies. The ayahs that have been chosen in this regard are ayahs 112 and 113 of Surah Hud of the Holy Quran. So please stay tuned. Anyone who, with the intention of obeying Allah's order, fasts in daytime and relinquishes pleasures, even the halal permitted ones, is indeed pursuing a lofty goal. He has decided to set himself free from the yokes of various desires, to let the spirit fly in the horizon of divine values. Freedom from the routine habits and yoke of despotic rules. This kind of freedom is the goal of all prophets, as the Holy Quran says. And certainly we raised an apostle in every nation, telling them, worship Allah and keep away from the rebels. This ayah clearly and decisively rules out worship of anyone other than Allah. In Islam, no one has the right to oppress and bully others. No one can subjugate others on the basis of his desires. Most human problems and miseries originate in miscomprehension of the reality of freedom or lack of resistance in its way. Therefore, those who fail to reach this comprehension and resistance accept the arrogance of others and flatter them. This increases their arrogance and rebellion, whereas Islam calls on the whole mankind to be humble only to Allah and those appointed by Him. The greatest contemporary exegete of the Holy Quran, Allama Muhammad Hussein Tabatabai, said that God is sensitive towards two sins in the Quran. One is usury and the other one is letting the enemies of Allah to rule over the Islamic community. The Almighty in Surah Hud of the Holy Quran, after the accounts of the nations of Prophets Noah, Hud, Saleh, Shu'aib and Moses, says in Ayah 112 of Surah Hud, so be steadfast, just as you have been commanded, you and whoever has turned to Allah with you, and do not overstep the bounds. Indeed, He sees best what you do. But what does Allah mean by steadfastness? The next ayah gives the answer. And do not incline towards the wrongdoers, lest the fire should touch you, and you will not have any friends besides Allah, then you will not be helped. By steadfastness, the Almighty stresses negation of inclination towards and relying on wrongdoers, since the least inclination towards them will make one share their fate. As for the nations of Noah, Hud, etc., it was only those who didn't incline towards wrongdoers who were saved. Interestingly, God does not say I will burn you if you go the wrongdoer. But he says that the wrongdoer himself is the fire. And in the end he says, then you won't be helped. It means that going to the wrongdoer will be of no avail and he will not help you. Allah tells all Muslims and freedom-seeking people not to accept the dominance of their enemies and the enemies of Allah. Enemies always intend to kill, harass and captivate others and wish them to become faithless. Yet, it is a matter of deep regret that Muslims, willingly or unwillingly, trust in enemies and lose everything including freedom and independence. Libya is a clear example of betrayal and breaching of covenant by the enemies. The last Libyan leader, Muammar Gaddafi, was put under severe pressure due to pursuing nuclear programs and numerous sanctions were enforced on the country by the United States and its complicit allies. The United States sometimes even resorted to invasion of the Libyan airspace in a bid to target Gaddafi's resistance. Finally, he delivered the information on the way of accessing nuclear equipment. In fact, Libya implemented all US demands only to see the removal of a few sanctions. But, at the same time, the CIA chief and the American envoy to Tel Aviv strongly opposed the removal of UN Security Council sanctions against Libya. Thus, every day, they forged new allegations against the country. In addition, the United States, in complicity with its permanent ally, Britain, forged popular mutiny in Libya to justify the ensuing aerial attack. Britain had been committed to defend Libya in case of any assault by a foreign country. Therefore, Gaddafi lost whatever he had, including his life, in trusting the enemy. The Islamic Republic of Iran has been successful in spreading its spiritual borders from Kashmir in the east to the Mediterranean Sea and deep into the Americas and Australia. In the beginning of formation of the Islamic rule in Iran, the enemy's top concern was to block Iran's way to barbed wire. But today, it has been shaken to its very core with a fear of Iran's high precision continental ballistic missiles. In 1979, the enemy, that is the United States, was worried about freedom of its spies in Iran, whereas today, when the best American military forces are taken as captive by Iranian soldiers, they start to weep while looking for adult diapers. Once, Iran needed missiles and rockets of other countries, but today, Iranian missiles determine the fate of wars in the region. The Islamic Republic of Iran, inspired and instructed by the Holy Quran and negation of trust in the enemy, has made great strides in science and technology and great breakthroughs in science, such as in peaceful nuclear technology, nanotechnology, aerospace science, physics, astronomy, and many other areas of science.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In Gaza, we're no longer on the brink of famine. We're in a state of famine, affecting thousands of people. The words of EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. I'm Saeed Pourreza. On this program, day three of ceasefire talks in Doha between an Israeli delegation and mediators from Qatar, the U.S., and Egypt. The Qataris say they're cautiously optimistic, but a breakthrough is too early to talk about. Meanwhile, hunger has reached catastrophic levels as a result of the Israeli siege of Gaza. The World Health Organization says an increasing number of children in Gaza are on the brink of death from acute hunger. Canada joins the Netherlands, Japan, Spain, and Belgium in suspending arms sales to the genocidal Israeli regime. But several Western countries continue to supply lethal weapons to Tel Aviv, despite the enormous human toll and an imminent famine in Gaza. The bulk of those weapons, of course, supplied by the U.S., Israel's closest ally. After nearly more than 5 months of the genocidal campaign, the death toll is at least 32,000 and more than 74,000 wounded. With us for this edition of the program, in the studio, Dr. Imran Ali Panjwani. Dr. Panjwani is head of diverse legal consulting and a senior lecturer in law. And via Skype from London is Dr. Nihat Khanfar, who is also a lecturer in law and politics. Gentlemen, thank you for being here. I'd like to start with you, Dr. Panjwani, and it's become a tradition to really start with getting our guests' reflections on more than 31,000 killed, over 70,000 wounded, the scale of the death and destruction in the Gaza Strip, and of course, as I read earlier, the imminent famine that is facing the population there.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think two immediate points come to our mind. One is, since our last discussion, which was specifically about the ICJ ruling, there appears not to have been a follow-up there, or perhaps South Africa is trying to do that. And so there doesn't appear to be legal limits based on international law to stop the genocide, to stop the massacre. That's the first thing. So legally, the first reflection I have is, how are we putting legal pressure on Israel? And number two is, historically, I mean, this is the worst genocide since Rwanda. The death toll keeps rising. And even though we are in Ramadan and we are fasting, there doesn't appear to be any sense of humanity and decency to stop the killing and give food to people who are starving and also fasting.
And South Africa has recently asked the ICJ to do more, which is to call for a ceasefire.
Yes, exactly. But there doesn't appear to be a legal follow-up in terms of implementation of the court ruling, because they said, okay, you have this by this date to report. So, okay, what are the next legal measures? How are we going to enforce the ruling? I think these are the more fundamental questions.
Dr. Khanfar, we'll get to, of course, the core issue of the stumbling blocks to achieving a ceasefire, but can I just have your thoughts on how necessary and how urgent a cessation in violence is, especially as we heard Dr. Panjwani say earlier, during the holy month of Ramadan?
Well, we have to look at what Netanyahu thinks, as a matter of fact. We shouldn't really treat Netanyahu as a normal politician in this political world. We have to treat Netanyahu in a very unique and specific case, because he wanted to position himself to be the man that he can break all the political red lines and sending a message to all world that I am the one really that you can't expect me to stop at any of these red lines that you have promoted or you have drawn for any other politician in this world. And of course, Netanyahu, in this case, because he always promoted himself to be the man of security, failing to deliver on that, he feels that he has really to do anything just to have any caption of victory. And it seems to be all what he can really do in that regard is just really killing more Palestinians and putting all his efforts to weaponize anything he can does, even challenging the American administration, Biden administration. It's coming in the same context. It is all about how Netanyahu is trying really to promote a new design of his own image, political image, in order just to send a message for his own fascist extreme right voters to tell them, I am the man who can really do whatever he wants just to protect so-called Israeli security.
And total victory, I think, is the phrase they have used against the resistance group in the Gaza Strip. Well, let's talk ceasefires now. Qatar says it remains cautiously optimistic about the possibility of reaching a ceasefire agreement between the resistance group Hamas and Israel, and that it's too early still to announce any successes. Foreign Ministry spokesman Majid al-Ansari says Israeli Mossad intelligence chief David Barnea has left Doha and that technical negotiations are ongoing between Israel and Hamas, with Qatar once more playing mediator between the parties. Well, here is Majid al-Ansari addressing journalists at a news conference in Doha.
I don't think we are at a moment now where we can say that we are close to a deal. We are, as I said, we are cautiously optimistic because the talks have resumed, and that is a good thing, and we hope that that continues, and we hope to build upon that in the coming days, but it's still too early to announce any successes. First of all, to put you all at ease, he has left Doha, according to the information I have, and the technical teams are still meeting here in Doha. We do believe, of course, and we have said this countless times, that any attack on Rafah would hamper any efforts to get a deal. It would be a humanitarian catastrophe within what is happening right now in Gaza. We are talking about around 1.5 million Palestinians crammed into 10% of Gaza. We already have surpassed the number of 31,000 dead as a result of this war, and an attack of such magnitude will result in major death and destruction that cannot be justified by any tactical justifications that are being presented.
All right, the Qatari Foreign Ministry spokesman there. Dr. Panjwani, you mentioned earlier, of course, the lack of any action in terms of implementation as per South Africa's request of the ICJ calling for a ceasefire. What do you think are the most important stumbling blocks to reaching a deal now?
Well, I think the stumbling blocks are fundamentally political. So the issue is that within the Western Hemisphere, as you said, with the US and the UK, there isn't political support to put pressure on Israel, so the stopping of arms. Mm-hmm. With the implementation of the ICJ ruling, the theory behind international law, it sounds very nice, okay, there you have the Genocide Convention, you have international human rights. International legally is known as a kind of tertiary or kind of supranational law. Mm-hmm. What that means is that it doesn't operate like a red traffic light. If you pass it, then you get a fine. Mm-hmm. Who are the international police? Who are the international safeguards that will, you know, slap you on the wrist and say, don't do this? We don't have that within international law. Oh. And the UN body is fundamentally political. So the stumbling blocks are that at the moment, the key players like US and UK are using political means to make sure that Israel is not held liable, despite what the legal text says.
Dr. Hanfar, you hear that there is, you talked about what, you know, to be able to think the way Netanyahu does, to know whether or not there will be a ceasefire, you'd have to see what Netanyahu has in mind, and you explained what he has in mind. But what is the significance of dissent within the Israeli war cabinet and public opinion, however minor that might be? We saw, for example, Gantz touring America, the U.S., Europe in recent weeks, apparently not coordinating with Netanyahu and all the rest of it. But what is the significance of that dissent in apartheid Israel as far as this genocidal war continuing? In other words, to what extent do you think that would make any difference to what apartheid Israel is willing to concede in these ongoing negotiations?
Sadly and unfortunately, the vast majority of the voters in Israel backing Netanyahu's policies of continuing the genocide or genocidal actions against the Palestinians. And this is one of the of the recent surveys in many, as a matter of fact, in many of the Israeli academic and journalistic investigations, the surveys saying that the vast majority of the Israelis backing up every single bloodshed happening really in Gaza and in the West Bank, simply because they see it a good opportunity and they have to seize it and to carry on what they have started. They started to, you know, ethnically cleanse the Palestinians from the northern parts of Gaza. And now they are fighting in the middle of Gaza, in Khan Yunis and Gaza City. So Rafah wouldn't be really a red line to them, especially now that we can sense some new kind of language in the U.S. mainly, yeah. Kind of accepting what is going to happen in Rafah, but they are trying, according to them, just to, you know, to decrease the harm against the civilians. So instead of killing, for example, 5,000, they might be looking to negotiate about 2,000. Instead of killing 10,000, they might be looking at, you know, 7,000 or something like this. So in general, Netanyahu is really looking at what his voters are saying, in addition to one of the most crucial issues, which is, you know, something really is recognized by the international community now and by the Israeli analysts, which they are repeating this all the time. The longer war in Gaza against the Palestinians, and probably even to expand it to towards the southern Lebanon, it would be really a very good political move to Netanyahu, because war, it means he would keep his political skin.
Yeah, that of course is the argument as far as Netanyahu, that the longer he prolongs the war, the longer he can stay in power, because he has charges against him, corruption charges and all the rest, and so it is in his benefit, to his benefit, to continue with this. But is it sustainable? I mean, surely there should be some acknowledgement that they haven't been able to, despite the fact that they've laid waste to the Gaza Strip and killed so many people, they haven't achieved any of their goals, the most important of which, as they claimed, was to take out the resistance. Yes. And we saw a video earlier on released by Hamas targeting Israeli tanks and taking out their troops in the Gaza Strip.
Yes, I think a lot of this rhetoric may be a facade. So when they say they want to take out Hamas is a resistance ideology. You can never take out that ideology, can always resurface. And indeed, for Netanyahu's sake, it is good for him, because at the end of the day, he's using that as a common enemy that the Israeli people have that will enable him, therefore, to wipe out Gaza. Mm-hmm. So the issue, in my small view, is not that he wants to take out Hamas. Hamas is simply a means to annex land, which is what happened to Native Americans, it was what happened to Aborigines, the same colonial mentality. Annex land, extend Israel, and then build on that land and wipe out heritage.
So that's what we heard, sorry to interrupt,
yes.
The Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner,
yes.
saying it makes a great waterfront property.
I know. So the same clip.
And we know that he and Netanyahu are buddies.
Yes, yes. So what I'm saying is that this is all about land and making sure one race is superior and can live in that land. Mm-hmm. That's what I... And so, is that I don't think he's really worried about the political fallout, because if he accomplishes this aim of annexation of land, well, will people forget about the charges? Perhaps. Will the charges be minimized? Yes. Can he use political leverage? Yes. Mm-hmm. Look at what happened to Tony Blair, George Bush, same thing.
All about him, isn't it?
Yes.
All right. Let's keep the ball rolling. The death toll in Gaza, of course, is continuing to mount in the absence of a ceasefire deal. Asghar Khan, an independent filmmaker in London, tells us neither Israel nor the Western leaders have any real interest in reaching a ceasefire deal.
I believe the ceasefire has stalled because Israel don't really want a ceasefire. They want their side of the deal to be met for the ceasefire to happen, which is hostages being released, which Hamas has agreed to. But Hamas also wants its hostages, stroke prisoners, released, who are being detained, imprisoned without charge. But Israel don't really want to do that. Hamas also want their civilians to return to parts of Gaza and want humanitarian aid through. But Israel don't want to meet that. And that's why the negotiations have stalled. The other reason why the ceasefires have stalled is because the international community, mainly America, Biden, the UK, Rishi Sunak, and all Western leaders and even Arab leaders, or leaders from all over the world, are not condemning Israel. They are not sanctioning Israel. I mean, they are so powerful, and everyone knows America controls Israel. They created Israel, yeah? And they could go there with their armies and stop Israel from committing genocide, war crimes, apartheid. But they don't want to do that because they have ulterior motives, which is oil, gas. I mean, look, Rishi Sunak and many world leaders have invested in the very companies that many believe now are going to steal the gas from Gaza. So basically, the world leaders are not held accountable for what is being done, yeah? And they need to do more. And if that's not going to happen, what we need is we need new leaders. We need new candidates. We need new MPs and presidents who do care about humanity. Because at the moment, these world leaders only care about the rich elite and themselves. They don't care about the working class people. They don't care about the children starving, the children dying, you know, people using food banks. They just care about themselves.
Askit went on to say that what is needed is a global anti-Zionist movement that will change the oppressed state of the world today.
They are trying to turn us into a totalitarian state now. They are trying to totally control us. And if anyone disagrees with the government or their views, basically they're just going to try and say that you're extremist because they don't want people to fight back against this dictatorship regime that they are trying to enforce on us. To mobilize an anti-Zionist movement, we need to let as many people know as possible what Zionism is about and what Israel are doing, because there are still many people who don't actually know what is going on in Israel and what the Zionists are doing because of the world media and the fact that they control the world media and all the social media platforms. And, you know, we need alternative platforms, we need alternative media, and we need to get the message out there. And we need a new electoral system. We need good people to stand for election and parliament, because these are the people who control our country and ultimately the world. So if we have good people standing for election, independent parties, independent candidates who actually care about the world, that would be the best way forward to achieve this.
The UN Food Agency says famine is imminent in northern Gaza, where over 200,000 people are believed to be experiencing catastrophic hunger. The World Food Program and other UN agencies released a report earlier in the week that says a further escalation of the bombardment, now in its sixth month, could push nearly half of Gaza's population to the brink of starvation.
In northern Gaza, famine is imminent, starting from now till May of this year. So it's a very short window to act. There are about 1.1 million people in catastrophic level of hunger. There are about 854,000 people who are in emergency level of hunger. And then there are about 276,000 people who are in crisis level. So the situation is terrible all along. In the rest of the country, the situation is also really bad, and there is a risk of famine. And that warning goes till July 2024. If there is no cessation to the hostilities, if displacements continue, if we are not able to bring enough food and access people, the report says that there is a famine which could even happen in the rest of the country by July 24.
Let's get some thoughts on those developments within the moments we have left on this episode of Gaza Under Attack. Doctors Imran Ali Panjwani and Nahat Khanfar are still with us. Dr. Khanfar, I'll start with you. What do you make of the restoration of funding to UNRWA, the UN agency? And we know how important the role it plays is, of course, in Gaza and beyond, by countries like Canada, Australia, and yet those other countries who are still, who are yet to unfreeze funding to the agency.
It's all about really the internal pressures, because they know whatever the decision they have taken against the UNRWA or the funding of UNRWA was baseless, and they are adopted just stupidly the Israeli narratives without really any kind of evidence. And it was really a big shame, especially they are promoting completely different principles and different different rules in to govern this war. But apparently it seems to be some internal pressures were really mounting on them just to restore the fund given to the UNRWA. I think they tried to convince themselves that this time Israel is promoting something, promoting the truth, but apparently they discovered quite early, I must say, that Israel is just really promoting lies over lies over lies over lies, and this time is not really something different. So this is how I see it, especially that the American administration is trying as well to moderate their language towards what's happening in Gaza, to put more blame on Netanyahu specifically, seeing the head of the Democrat majority in the Senate saying or using a tough language against Netanyahu. I think it's all coming in that direction and that context.
All right, and of course Chuck Schumer, that Democratic majority leader. That takes us to the states, Dr. Panjwani, and countries that are yet to unfreeze funding. The U.S. was first to suspend funding. On the one hand, you have that Washington Post expose saying the U.S. has flooded arms into Israel, more than 100 separate military sales to apartheid Israel since the invasion of Gaza. And then at the same time, you hear the U.S. President, Joe Biden, saying we must get more aid into Gaza. There are no excuses, none. Here in the U.K., arms licenses still to be suspended to Israel. What do you make of all of that?
I think, as I remember when we spoke last time, this is a very common way that when there is war or genocide, in order to achieve democratic aims, you send aid. In order to keep political face, you send aid. So on the one hand, you allow killing, but in a very utilitarian manner. You want to achieve your end despite the destruction. Okay, and if there is people dying, fine, and you try to alleviate that. So the way I look at it, this is no consistent moral principle. This is simply a matter of, well, if there's guilt, you hear the spokespeople of the U.S. presidency speaking that, oh, it's very gut-wrenching, for example, people are dying. Yeah. Well, okay, to satisfy their conscience, they will send aid. They will throw a bit of food there in the air. So yes,
some of which end up killing people because the
parishes
don't open.
Lack of moral consistency, alleviation of guilt, keeping political face. I don't think there's any genuine relief effort. If people really wanted, then it would be like, for example, Ukraine and people taking in Ukraine refugees. And
there are hundreds of trucks waiting to get in, with laden with aid.
Yes, of course.
And the Israeli regime is preventing them from going in.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. Our time is definitely up. Our thanks to Dr. Imran Ali Panjwani and Dr. Nahat Khanfar, and to you for staying with us. Until next time, continue to keep Palestine in your hearts. Goodbye for now.
WRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints. I'm Atta, the host of this program. May Allah accept all your supplications, prayers, and fasting during these holy months of Allah, the spring of the Holy Quran. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom to discuss today's topic, Sheikh Mahdavi and Sheikh Nur Muhammad. Sheikh Mahdavi, salam alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Nur Muhammad, salam alaikum to you.
Salam alaikum wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
Some days from now on would be the birthday anniversary of Imam Hassan al-Mushtaba. We know that on Ramadan 15th, or the 15th day of the holy month of Ramadan, is the birthday anniversary of Imam Hassan al-Mushtaba, and he was known by the title Al-Karim, the benevolent, we can call it, or the generous. We can also translate it into English language. For today's discussion, we want to talk about the concept of Ikram and why Imam Hassan al-Mushtaba alayhi salam was called the Karim of the Ahlul Bayt. Sheikh Nur Muhammad, let's start with you, brother. What is the definition of Ikram in general?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The meaning of Ikram means to giving nobility or honoring some people, okay. You know, that's how Islam and how this beautiful divine religion of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is giving honor to all human beings, regardless of any religion, regardless of any denomination, only because you are a human being. Yes. Sometimes in this beautiful divine religion of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, giving honor and honoring people because of the faith,